Hi, good morning, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it is my pleasure to welcome you all here today for this session to talk about Jubilee Homes. But I would like to give a special welcome. We have several guests in the audience, and we're happy to have you here. I want to let you know that once we get past the presentations, we'll have a question and answer session, and I will be looking for questions, so hold up your hand if you have a question, and I'll bring the mic over to you, and hopefully we'll have a bit of time for that towards the end. For everyone, I wanted to give you a heads up about next week's program. And that is going to be Professor Miriam Ellman. She is new to us, although not new to the university. She's a professor of political science at the Maxwell School in the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs. And she's also the director of the Project on Democracy in the Middle East. So as you might guess, she's going to be talking about Egypt's regime change and the prospects for democracy in the Middle East. So that is the next program. So if you know of any people who are particularly interested in that aspect of politics and international relations, they would certainly be welcome to join us. Right now, I'm going to ask everyone to please turn off or silence their cell phones. I know we sometimes forget, and then that happens. So that will be very helpful. And then I'm going to ask one of our newest TMR regulars, Dan Hartnett, to come up and introduce the moderator of today's panel. Dan is with Prudential Realty. He's also on the board of directors of Home Headquarters, the Salvation Army, and Habitat for Humanity. So please welcome Dan.
Thank you. My mother would be proud. I've been asked to introduce Walt, and I feel as though I've known Walt for, well, probably since 1987 when he started Homes Jubilee, because I've read his name in the paper just about every day, it seems to me. But I've got my little cheat sheet, so bear with me. Walter has served as Executive Director of Jubilee Homes of Syracuse, Incorporated, since its inception in 1987. Under his leadership, Jubilee to date has built close to 100 single-family homes on the southwest side of the city of Syracuse. Through his tireless community development efforts, Jubilee has assisted in transforming the landscape of a community once overrun with abandoned and dilapidated buildings into a thriving neighborhood. Well done, Walt. Pretty high marks here. The agency has been involved in the collaborative effort to construct the HUD-funded 9/11 Hudson Street special housing project operated by Home Incorporated, which encompasses 5 four-bedroom apartments for adults with disabilities and their families. In addition, the agency has been involved with a cross-agency, faith-based collaborative with Foursquare Gospel Church, Peace Incorporated, and Community Preservation Lending. Jubilee has advanced its mission to include economic development initiatives through the development of Southwest Economic Business Resource Center, as well as its service to area youth through a couple of really cool things: the Urban Delights Youth Farm Stand Project, and the Youth Build Program. Both are youth employment training programs. Mr. Dixie's community involvement stretches into his personal life as well. He is the founder of the Alliance Network and a multi-ethnic public issues advocacy group. The Alliance Network is committed to improving the quality of life in Central New York, politically, socially, economically, educationally, and spiritually. Alliance Network seeks to improve the physical conditions of neighborhoods, recognizing that the health and viability of the city of Syracuse rest in its neighborhoods and its communities. With that, can we welcome Walt?
For the Development Corporation of Time of Jubilee and Jubilee Homes. And everybody knows Linda. She's like my second mother. She's raised me and birthed me in this program. And the mission is to serve as a catalyst for achieving the long-term revitalization of the southwest side of the city of Syracuse through homeownership, neighborhood revitalization, economic development, and youth development. I'm going to go off script for a minute. That's what I do. But I want to talk about, this is Black History Month, and I want to give a historical perspective of this agency and the collaboration between the downtown clergy as well as the Interdenominational Ministry Alliance. Years ago, when this was formed, some of the pioneers is Bob Shue, Bob McAuliffe, who did the legal work for us, Reverend Howard Frank Wolliver, Hal Garman, Jim O'Brien, Linda Irving came at the end of that, Harvey Pinion, Reverend Avery, were people that came together to figure out what could the clergy do in terms of the black and white clergy to find a project to work on. And at that time, it was housing, because in this area, it was just a waste of vacant land. And also through the city's efforts, Dave Michaels a part of that, Willie Morgan, Tom Young, it all just gelled. And when you think about then, when there was no homeownership, then, you know, through Tom Young's effort, the Syracuse Housing Partnership, through Ann Peterson, or M&T Bank, I think it was, a Chase Bank, I forget the bank she was, been a long time, Merchants, I think she started with. And it, you developed this called $500 down, no closing. So I always like to remind folks across this county, when you're buying these homes for $500 with no closing, it started from the ideal of doing in our neighborhood and became a regional concept, and we have been instrumental in that. So I just want to recognize why we came together and our challenges. We've always been short on funds, but we've been big on ideals. And in terms of the history of the organization, I kind of like said it like that. I just wanted to do it. And then I know this, the accomplishments of the agency, there's some that you will see here, because we do a lot of things. And we have a very small staff, so I do applaud my staff for being committed to social justice. And that's what this is all about for us, is social justice and really trying to push ourselves into the mainstream in our community. And we've had great partnerships. And I want to recognize Joan. She's been Joan Christensen. Give her a big hand, because she's helped us every year. And we're rehabbing our office today. She's been unbiased and just, you know, personally just supporting this organization in her 10 years. So I want to thank you publicly. I have not got a chance to say anything for you. So that's my time. So I got the easy part. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you all so much for giving us the opportunity to share a little bit about the history of Jubilee Homes, some of our accomplishments, and some of the initiatives that we are very excited to be announcing and working on and implementing in the very near future. So today we will be presenting three of our initiatives. One is the Urban Farm Project. Then I will be talking about that. Then Melvin Baker will give you some information about the progress and updates and growth of our Youth Build USA program. And then Patrice Chang is here to share information about the supermarket initiative. So first is our Urban Delights Youth Farm Stand Project, Urban Farm Project. And again, my name is LaRonda, and I'm very excited to share with you the history of the program and some exciting, very exciting new developments and implementations that we are working on. So first I'll tell you about Urban Delights. Urban Delights is a very innovative youth development program started in 1999. The goal of the program was to address three primary objectives. These are youth development, economic development, and food security. So the program addresses youth development by employing anywhere from 15 to 22 youth in the summer, where they own and operate fruit and vegetable stands at various inner city sites in the city of Syracuse. So over the summer, the youth do team building activities, they attend workshops, they learned about entrepreneurship, what entrepreneurship is, they learn about pricing models and strategies and calculating profits and profit margins and marketing, they do computer courses, they learn how to make flyers, they learn how to write business letters and develop marketing plans and ideas and strategies. And once they do that over a two-week training period, then the youth are ready to go out and set up and own and operate produce stands in the city. So the program addresses economic development by, one, providing youth with an employment opportunity as well as enhanced training that we believe will guide them in their future career and job pursuits. Then we address food security. Again, the students set up farm stands in the inner city, where we know there is a significant lack of affordable and nutritious fruits and vegetables. So the youth are cognizant of this, and they make sure that the produce that they have available at their farm stands is affordable. They make sure it's fresh, and they do serve their customers with the utmost in customer service. So the youth learn a lot over the summer. We've had great success since the program has been implemented. And as up until now, the students have primarily gotten the produce from the farm stands, from local wholesalers, and as well as local and regional growers. Now, where we want to go is we want to not only provide fresh produce to the community through our local farmers, but we want to engage our students in the process of farming themselves. Thereby, we have began to implement the Jubilee Homes Urban Farm Project. So on the board, there's a picture of the lots that we have already started to transform into a farm on the southwest side of Syracuse. I'm not sure how well you can see the details of the picture, but the plot includes about 12 vacant lots on the southwest side that are bordered by Lincoln Avenue, Bellevue, and Midland. So the site in total is about almost an acre. It's about 0.8 acres. So this spring, again, the site development has actually already started, and this spring our youth will be there planting fresh fruits and vegetables, so not only will they be providing access to affordable and nutritious foods, but we are also addressing the issue of vacant land on the southwest side, which we have a plethora of. So what are some of the project objectives? Of course, the first is youth development. At Jubilee Homes, we believe that any meaningful community revitalization effort must involve a meaningful investment in our youth. So with the program, the youth will have significant influence over where the project is going, what fruits and vegetables will be planted. They will be very instrumental in further development of the business plan. In addition to that, our youth will be very instrumental, again, in project implementation, planning, and development. As well, we develop them personally as well as professionally. Then the project will address food security. We want to increase food security, again, increasing the availability, the access to affordable and nutritious food, fruits and vegetables, thereby hopefully increasing the overall health and well-being of the people in our community. The third objective is to improve the environmental and aesthetic quality of vacant land on the southwest side. As I mentioned, there is an abundance of vacant parcels on the southwest side. So we want to address that by turning something that is a source of community blight to a thriving area of green space that will serve as an educational tool, and as well as something that is aesthetically pleasing to the neighbors and to the community that we serve. And lastly, our goal is to enhance community awareness. A key component of the project is to educate and inform our neighbors and those that we are serving about the importance of eating healthy, of eating and of eating locally and supporting the local economy. The site will also have an area for community gardening space. So not only will the youth be planting fruits and vegetables for sale, as well as commercial for sale in the neighborhood and commercial sale, but there will be plots available, and the youth will educate those in the community on gardening if they wish to do so themselves as well. So what our progress thus far, what have we done? Well, these are some of the things that we've completed. We've identified and purchased the lots that I showed you in the former slide, so we're very excited about that. We've done soil testing. Some of you may be wondering, are you going to plant a garden on the southwest side? There's lead, there's contamination. Yes, that is correct. We have done phase one environmental tests, and we also have strategies that we're going to implement and use so that what we're growing is not impacted by the health of the soil. So, for example, we'll be doing raised beds planting, and that's planting vegetables on top of the ground, so we will be importing, if you will, soil and generating our own compost, so that won't be an issue. We've done a lot of training and education. Myself, as well as the project partners, have attended conferences where we have learned and continue to learn a great deal about agriculture and urban ag, As well, we've done some food exploration activities a couple of years ago with some of the youth doing surveys and learning about what food is. And last November, we had a phenomenal event of an initial ground prep where we had over 100 volunteers come and help us lay mulch over the ground to get it prepped for planting. So where we are now, February, March, and April, this quarter, we will be in March installing our infrastructure, which includes fencing, greenhouse, compost bins, and shed, and we will do that with the help of our youth build program. We plan to do some compost building and cultivating the lands, planting an initial crop. We will be getting our youth together by April to complete the design of the project, as well as they will be, again, evolving the business plan, deciding what they will be growing, who their target markets will be, and then we will be planting the starter crops, and last but certainly not least, securing additional business investment. Even though Jubilee Homes is a not-for-profit, and we hear it with not-for-profits, in organizations, we always hear fundraising and grant support. Our model, we're taking a different approach. We are looking at this as a business, and we definitely want to be self-sustaining. So as we approach investors, we are definitely thinking outside of the box. Again, we're not looking for gifts or handouts. We are looking for investments because we believe that this is a meaningful project that has a lot of potential that we know will be self-sustaining. So here's a picture. I'm not sure if you can see it with the glare of some of our volunteers who came out to help us start the ground prep last November. So, again, the goal is to be sustainable. So what is our sustainability strategy? In terms of staffing and volunteers, we will utilize a youth core model. A youth core model is one which, while we are training the youth, we are also infusing them with leadership so that as they are growing and progressing through the program, they are able to eventually take the reins of leadership. We have after-school programming for the spring, fall, and winter maintenance and months. The goal is to hire a full or part-time farm manager, and we will do that through our partners at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Onondaga County. And then Jubilee Homes, of course, will continue to provide the administrative management and oversight. In terms of produce, again, one of our main objectives is food security. So a quarter of our yields will be donated to schools, area food banks, and then the remainder will be sold in the community. We also, our goal is to develop a specialty crop for retail sale to generate revenue and profits to, again, sustain the program. Over the years, we want the program to be self-sustaining and then to address our snow and our sometimes inclement weather. Here in the city of Syracuse, we will incorporate hoop houses and greenhouses to extend the season so that we're not just able to plant and harvest in the spring and summer months, but also in the fall and early winter. We, again, are generating capital support. We're not looking for grants or donations, but we are looking for investments because we believe that the return on our project will be significant both socially and financially. So we hope to generate capital support from farm revenues, developing investor relations and evolving business plan. Again, the goal is not to be stagnant and not to be content where we are, but we will always be looking for ways to grow and expand our business model. And then there are research and development opportunities in the project that have already been explored. Students from Cornell University have already come down to do soil tests because we will be examining how planting on the site will mitigate some of the soil issues that are already existing. And then we also have a very meaningful partnership with SUNY ESF where there is possible research going on with implementing an anaerobic digester on the site as well, which would provide a source of energy for the project. So our urban farm partners, again, are Cornell University Cooperative Extension of Onondaga County, SUNY ESF, Filtrex, Land Improvement Systems, and the city of Syracuse. And I also want to introduce my colleague with the program, Mr. Greg Michael, who is the owner. Greg Rates just waved. He'll be here to help us answer questions as well. I do the administrative part and the business part, and Greg really knows a great deal and a significant amount about the technicalities of farming, of agriculture, and specifically urban agriculture. And should you have any questions after this is over, need additional information, my contact information is listed. And again, I and Greg will be here throughout the morning to answer any questions. So thank you for your time. And without further ado, Mr. Melvin Baker is here to talk about the Youthville program.
Good morning. It is certainly good to be here, and I want to thank everyone for your attention as we go forward. Youthville is, as Rolanda alluded to, another manifestation of Jubilee Homes' passion for young people in our community. I want to kind of frame it in what we're dealing with in present day, so I'll briefly talk about the history and the makeup of the program. Youth Build started in Harlem in the late 1970s. It was founded by a lady by the name of Dorothy Stoneman, who is still very active and is still advocating very strong for the program. There are nearly 300 sites throughout 45 states in the United States, also including the District of Columbia and the Virgin Islands. When she started the program, she met a group of young men and women in East Harlem who she challenged to invest in their own community. And in getting to know them, she realized that many of them had not completed high school, and so she challenged them again to finish what they started in terms of their education. So the core principles for the Youth Build program are assisting young men and women between the ages of 16 and 24 who have dropped out of high school, challenge them to go back and to obtain their GED, and there are also charter schools where they actually work to obtain a high school diploma while learning the various aspects of the construction trade. It is a program that provides a nationally recognized certificate in construction and carpentry through the National Home Builders Institute. But beyond the scope of education and construction, it also deals with the need to develop young leaders. There are very few places where we are challenging young men and women to take the reins in their youth and to really invest and try to make strides in social issues and making them socially aware. But we also work very hard and very diligently to, once the program is over, to find a place of employment. In fact, this current cycle, we recently brought on what we call a transition specialist who works with our former class participants as well as our current participants as they complete the program to find gainful employment beyond the 35-week program that we offer. The program also, during the 35 weeks, while they're learning to obtain their GED and to learn construction, we provide them with an $80 weekly stipend, as well as providing them with a minimum wage a compensation. So it is not just school. It is not just a volunteer training program, but we are doing our due diligence to make it a professional setting where they're accountable for their professional behavior. They're responsible for being on time. In fact, my motto is, if you are 1 minute late, you go home. You have to understand just how critical it is to develop good professional behavior, because I have to have the confidence as a program director, and Mr. Dixie as the executive director of Jubilee Home has to have the confidence when these young men and women come and ask for our recommendation for their next job, that we can say in good consciousness that they are, in fact, ready to be professionals in the greater workplace. In addition to the core principles of the program, we also have added on a couple of new initiatives in this current cycle because we think meeting all the needs of our participants as much as we possibly can are extremely important. So this year we added on a new component, which is our mentoring initiative, where young men and women, between the ages of 16 and 18 are given professional men and women throughout the community who are looking to give back. And so as I, if I can, I'll take a moment to say, if you're looking to invest in a young man or young woman's life, and you have at least 4 hours a month, and you can pass the minimum background check, we would love to have you as a mentor for our Youth Build program. Also, in addition to that, we are now a AmeriCorps Youth Build program where we challenge and sign up all of our participants to give over 400 hours of community service and volunteering as a member of our Youth Build program. Actually, on last month, we had a Martin Luther King National Day of Service where, in honor of Dr. King, we went back to a couple of local community churches and we remodeled in a day project, a Living Water, Fellowship Hall, and also Greater Love in Christ, whose former pastor, Dr. Bill Lott, was very influential in the community, who cared about young people. We thought it would be a nice way to honor Dr. Lott and just say thank you to the Christian faith, which was so instrumental in the person of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'm sure many of you know Reverend Carter, who is so involved in our community, who cares so much about young people and social issues. We thought it'd be a nice feather, a nice presentation to Dr. Carter, Reverend Carter, during his time while he's still here, just to honor him in honor and in the spirit of Dr. King. So the young men and women, they got there early that morning, they laid the tarp, patched up some walls, painted some walls, and they did such a great job that Reverend Carter has actually asked them to come back and do some more work for them. So certainly kudos to the young men and women of Youth Build for that. if I may, here are some of our partners, CNY Works, also the City of Syracuse, home headquarters, Syracuse Model Neighborhood, where the young men and women are currently doing some rehab projects. There is a house that got on that caught fire on Landon, and the young men and women are tearing down cabinets. They're picking up floors and relaying floors, doing patchwork, as well as Center State CEO, also formerly known as the Chamber, our Syracuse City School District. Our program is actually held at the Sidney Johnson Vocational Center, where we have, from according to the principal there, the best GED teacher that they have to offer, who is doing a tremendous job. Actually, we had four young men on this week take their GED exam, and we're anticipating another five or six in the month of March who will be sitting for their GED exam, as well as Partners for Education and Business, who has provided a program called Work Keys along with Syracuse University, which helps our young men and women prepare furthermore with job readiness. And then also SUNY EOC, who's helped with college prep classes. But if I can, just for a moment, talk about why this program is so important. Anybody who watches television or opens up a newspaper knows that the City of Syracuse schools are challenged in many, if not, to be honest, hundreds of young men and women every year are not completing their education through the four high schools. And the reality that we're looking at is the classes are too big. Teachers, in many cases, are overworked. Young men and women have obstacles like teen pregnancy, gang violence, where doing mainstream education is not working, which means a program like Youth Build is that much more important. It must stay in this community. In fact, Mr. Dixie and myself are beginning conversations to see if whether or not we can bring a Youth Build charter school where we can talk to those young men and women who are on the streets, who has failed out of school, and challenge them to resume their education. This summer alone, in just 60 days, we had over 120 applications. I had 60 young men and women show up on our first day of mental toughness. And after 2 weeks of challenging them mentally and physically, including a 10-mile walk, I had nearly 45 young men and women still there at the end of 10 days. And if you ask them why they endured wearing a trash bag on top of their clothes, or why they picked up trash, or why they walked from Living Water Church, all the way out to Fairmount and back, because they really do want to make a change. And for many of them, they've lost hope. But Youth Bill provides them with an avenue of hope, but also with an avenue of discipline that is much needed for many of the young men and women in our community. So any way, sir, ma'am, that you can support Jubilee Homes and its initiative to strengthen Youth Build and keep Youth Build in our city, we certainly welcome it. If you have any questions or would like further information, in addition to my office number, email, my cell phone number is there as well. Thank you for your time.
Good to see new faces. Thank you for coming this morning. We've been hearing a lot about community and economic development tied into one. One of the initiatives that's coming out at Jubilee Homes, as like all the other wonderful things that's been happening, is a supermarket initiative. An initiative that I'm sure that you've heard about over the past going on 2.5 years. That we have been working progressively to make sure that it actualized by 2012. The supermarket initiative is something that I'm excited about, and the supermarket committee members have been excited about. The growing community of interest have been excited about, and sharing it with you, I'd like to take a step back from all the buzzwords and just look at the real deal that's happening in the city of Syracuse, and specifically on the southwest, south side of Syracuse. If you live in Syracuse, you know, or even if you're just passing through, that we're faced with challenges in terms of our infrastructure, in terms of the things that we have readily available to provide, things that are of basic necessity to our population of people. Now, it's quite obviously that in terms of population density, that is something that we have seen that is very, very full in terms of our youth. I was looking at our statistic nationwide and looking at what's going on in the city of Syracuse in terms of the amount of youth population that we have, specifically in the demographics that characterize people in terms of color codes and in terms of young, black, and brown youth in Syracuse. We have a situation, and I just want to throw this number out at you because it's going to be tied into this piece that I think sometimes that we overlook. We have a situation that we have 2,200 homeless youth on the south side of Syracuse and throughout the city of Syracuse that are not necessarily having a place to sleep, that are actually living in areas that are even considered condemned or closed down a building. So when we look and see what we're looking to do, we have to continue to look at an overall picture of challenges that we have in terms of providing for the basic needs of what our people need. One of the things that Jubilee Homes have been doing, and I am happy to be a part of it, is looking at what counts in terms of setting priorities to move forward in terms of community and economic-based initiative. When we look at sustainability, or we talk about food security, or we talk about workforce development, we're using words that we've heard before, and we're looking at things in terms of what is it that's important to do when you're looking to put projects or initiatives in place. At the heart of anything that we do, there are three major things that we know that we need. We need housing because we need shelter. We need food because we need nutrition. We need jobs because we need to pay and have a way of supporting ourselves through this. And so hearing the word sustainability, hearing the words food security, which we've heard in our previous presentation, and even looking at job creation, is something that we've become quite familiar with. When Jubilee started the supermarket initiative, it came out of understanding that there is a need that has not been fully met on the southwest side of Syracuse, that there is a need and a growing and continuing need in the city of Syracuse to have healthy food access for all its residents. Being in a mid-sized city, I think demands that, especially when you have the inner city areas, that there is adequate infrastructure that's put in place and adequate markets that's going to feed our people, and making sure that we don't just look at community development without economic development jointly. And we don't look at providing places for people to live and residence for families without looking at all the other necessary components of what we need. And so Jubilee Supermarket is an initiative that's taken into account economic and community-based initiatives tied into one. The vision. The vision is to not only take on an initiative that is going to be around for 6 months to a year or 2 years. We're talking about building something that's going to be sustainable and something that is going to be done well the first time, so that as we maintain it, that it will be lasting for generations to come. We're looking at a plan that's going to be able to sustain itself, not just for 5 years and 10 years, but throughout the years that people grow, 25 years, 50 years, 100 years. The vision is to create a site, a place where people can come and buy foods at a reasonable price, where it will be staffed with employees that come out of our local areas that are in very much need of work, at least 65 new employees or new job creation in that area. The vision is to take a structure that already exists, that once was a grocery store, that is in need of extension in order for a 22,000 feet square footish building to become a 33,000 square feet building that can actually house healthy compartments in terms of food and food security, utilizing local food chains that already exist, such as your organically grown products through farmers and farmland, bringing in the urban market piece and the farm stands that you just heard about, and the youth into this particular place. And I'm using the term place for a second, because when we hear supermarket, we know of things like PNC, we know markets such as Wegmans, we know markets such as No James, we know markets that exist already that we're familiar with, but this is greater than just a place to access food. This is also a landmark that is going to exist on South Avenue, in a place that such landmark does not exist today, in a place that you've got community people who are not able to walk 8 to 10 blocks from where they live or even down the street to access foods that they can feed themselves with that's going to be healthy. You've got single parents. You've got families that are, quote unquote, both parent living in households that want to be able to feed their, and elderly as well, want to be able to feed their family healthy foods and have no such access today. So we're talking about priority measures. That's going to cost us an estimated amount of $4 million to build correctly in a sustainable manner, to make sure that we take into consideration the things that we have working for us in the city of Syracuse already. When we deal with sustainable building, we talk about implementing green technology and the importance of it. Now, it's rehabbing, so we're not building from scratch. However, there are lots of things that you can do in terms of green building with existing sites. We are happy that the county saw it in our favor to look at us in terms of looking at making sure that we have roofing and sidewalks and pavements and things of that nature that can sustain rainwater, that can utilize the energies that are God-given to us already in a way that is going to help us continue to build a structure that's sustainable. And so we were able to receive funds for sustainable building in that way through GIS. The projected start date for this, I mentioned, is 2012. Now, we've been working on this particular piece since 2008. We picked up pace in 2009, and I mentioned 2008 because of the Midland Bellevue project and initiative that happened on the southwest side of Syracuse. A lot of us are familiar with the remediation dollars that came from that. Jubilee Homes was able to have a drive or continue to utilize collective force and collective wisdom in terms of understanding that when there is monies that are out there for community and economic development, that it's important that it's placed towards priority projects. And so Mr. Dixie stepped up and said that even though a lot of this money is going on into housing and residential pieces, that we need to also secure a site that is going to deliver for us access to healthy foods, access to things that you can go to a Wegmans if you wish to drive to the outskirts of the city to access, that you can go to a Price Chopper if, again, you have a vehicle and you don't, or if you wish to stand in the snow and take a bus to the outskirt of the city or the area that you live in. If you wish to walk about 20 to 25 city blocks in the cold or at that particular time in the year, because this is a winter city as well, and head on down the lane to at least 1.5 or 3, or 0.3, let's look at the closest other store that's there, 0.3 miles away, to say a No James, which we're happy is there. But if you wish to do that and go down the other strip to access foods, you can do that as well. If you wish to go down Valley Drive and see if you can get down to some bodega or maybe a burned dairy, if you can find one now, we're losing that as well. You know, here is a place that you would have to leave your community or your area in order to access something that's healthy to eat. And so we saw a site that already exists at 611 South Avenue, right there where the grocery store once was. And people began to formulate a vision of bringing back to what used to exist, an accessible place to buy foods and eat, to look at 611 South Avenue and say, why not? Why not have a full-fledged supermarket once again on the southwest side that can provide food and nutrition to this community alongside other supermarkets that may exist?
Right.
We're rounding it up now. Thank you. So we have over 3,000 Shopper Club members in the community that looked at this initiative and owned this initiative and is consistently calling and texting and sending messages and consistently emailing and contacting us. When is this going to happen? Is this still a vibrant project that's happening? And we're saying yes. We have the city of Syracuse that has partnered with us to continue to make this a real deal happening for 2012. And we have the Midland-Lincoln-Bellevue committee that spearheaded the dollars to begin in terms of purchasing this building still with us as partners for this. Our contact information is listed. Myself, Walt and Toretta Hill, who has put this presentation together for us. Thank you, Toretta. And if you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
And we'll make sure and get the emails up on the website. And even, Tourette, if you can give us the presentation, we could put the whole thing up on our website, too. Anyway, I said there were going to be questions. So, questions. Greg, did you have anything to add on the farm stand?
We have had efforts to put supermarkets on the south side, one opposite the old Sears building, south. My question is, No Jams is a very important supermarket that is serving the west side of Syracuse. Do you see in any way that this would take away, because of the location, from the No Jams consumer area?
I think, first of all, that it's a legitimate question. When we did our market study for our area, it did not encompass that zip code in that area. And what Patrice was talking about is predominantly the southwest quarter that we reside in. We're mindful that in New York City you have a path mark, and we're told that even in Central Harlem, where it's at, is that you can have three or four path marks. So what we're trying to do is build back our urban neighborhood ourselves, and we're not worrying about other supermarkets or other big boxes that are moving all through the community, but really creating. What we didn't talk about in our study, we are creating 63 living wage jobs in here, because our ideal is not to maximize profits for individual self, but to really share the profit back to the employees and reinvest back into our community. So that's where. So we don't see this as competition, and actually competition is not a bad thing either.
Can I just add also is that you have Wegmans and Price Chopper 300 meters from each other, and it doesn't take away from either of their markets. I shop at Wegmans, I shop at Price Chopper according to need. And so we believe that No Jams and where it's situated is where it should be, and it serves a population. I shop at No Jams as well if I have to drive to access certain foods. But we also need other supermarkets within that area as well to feed our people and so that they have access to healthy foods.
Let me add to this. This is an important piece. Our agency has developed, and what we have learned at Best Price around the country, when you build 100 homes and we're working on a main street component and you do all those things and you don't provide those folks these luxuries, the place those are shut in, is that you destroy what you build up. And our fear is that that's something we're focused on rehab now, because if we don't do this, for all the 20 years we've been investing, it just goes down the tube. So what folks said, the community said, this is what they want. It wasn't Jubilee Homes. The board agreed to this. This came from the community, and we do have 3,745 shopper club cars from this community said they want this to happen. Our challenge is to get our government that if they can give millions of dollars, we know we're in tough times today, but if we can give millions of dollars of grant monies to every entity that lobbyists can think of in this town, and no one is advocating for our community, that's why Joan has been a great supporter of us, we need to get that message done. There need to be some equity of our taxpayer dollars in our neighborhoods.
Excuse me, have you investigated, I'm sure you have, the Wegmans, the Price Choppers, the Tops, and what do they say, and is there any suggestion that, why do they give you the reasons why they will not come in there?
Well, I can't speculate for them, but what I would say that we have done enough homework as Best Practice to understand the way they operate, what we need to do. We do understand those things in different models. We don't have enough time. We can have another conversation about some of that kind of issues, but I don't want to take the time from that.
Can I just add one thing? Wegmans and these stores, they wish to remain on the outskirts rather than move into the quote-unquote inner city areas.
I think what she just said was they have a different kind of business model. It's just not yet anyway. Right, they're changing. Walmarts are changing, and other kinds of stores are changing. And
now, in terms, they're interested in remaining on the outskirts. They do not have a problem with maybe in some level of promotion or providing some level of partnership. But as it stands, their stores will remain on the outskirts of cities rather than on the inner cities, for the upstate area, that is.
Walt, a number of years ago, the Jubilee Homes started as, I believe, as a land trust situation. I was wondering, how much of the land trust is your housing, and where are those lines, and what other type of housing are you doing?
Well, we have modified the land trust because the banks have changed, and what we have is called a restricted deed today. But philosophically, the land trust, the concept of the land trust in terms of us being a good partner to the land and the relationship with the homeowner versus us still exists. So in one end, you know, we still have first option if a homeowner wants to sell their home we work with home headquarters to buy back homes through them. So it's that before you had the neighborhood banks, today the banks are not neighborhoods. So we have to modify the land trust concept. The spirit of it still exists.
To also add that even although a lot of people, when they hear about what a land trust is, are very apprehensive, but it's actually worked out very well for Jubilee Homes. And of the 100 homes we've built, only the last four we've built have been not in the land trust. And again, we had to come up with an alternative, not because homeowners were displeased or unhappy, but because the culture of banks was changing and they didn't want to finance. And that's really the only reason why we had to try to really move away from it. But it's worked really, really well.
Walter and Jubilee Homes, I've watched over the years where you've always been a growing person or growing people type business as Jubilee Homes, as enumerated into three different things we talked about this morning. What are the challenges that your group, the Jubilee Homes, encounters on a day-to-day basis that hold you back from doing more of what you're trying to do?
I think that's an excellent question. I think that we had some consultants came in to look at our organization a few years ago, I believe it was, and one of the things that came out of it is that we don't toot our horn enough, and we need to become more in the mainstream so folks can see the kind of things we do. And we really have a small staff. It's not easy to work for, I won't say Wall for Jubilee, because it's very demanding and complex of the type of projects we take on. So, yes, we don't get a great deal of support from foundations. We need to figure out how to build those relationships. Then there's also where folks, you know, in this, I think the chancellor has begun to try to roll this territory, or is only one way fits best and not others. And so how to introduce ourselves into here. And folks really see how to invest in this. It can be the insurance industry to see the various types of work you see we do. It's finding a niche that you like. At the end of the day, I'm a believer not just having a job, but we really have good outcomes and measure our performances. And we've been doing that from day one. So now that's the new thing. We've always been sustained by that, about our outcomes. So we have to just do a better job on that.
I was intrigued by something that Melvin mentioned in the Youth Build presentation, and that was the possibility of a charter school built around the Youth Build model. And I'm because not all students can learn in a traditional setting. So I was wondering if you could tell me more about that, and is there some research going on, and do you see that as a possibility? How does that fit in with, like, the cap on the number of charter schools? What do you have to do to make that vision?
I don't get Melvin in trouble because our board would have to first approve it, but let's talk about why we begin to explore this conversation before we take it to the board. What some of the board members know is that when you think about a kid that's been out of school and disciplined, they bring so many issues. You know, we have social workers, we have the counselors, we have the mentors, and dealing with a kid like an athlete, you have this array of people to manage you, and that's not how I grew up. And so these kids have so much crisis in their lives, you know, from being affected with AIDS or, you know, dropout, pregnancy. I mean, it is a challenge that you don't have in a school that's the kind of real support. That's why Say Yes is so important in terms of the model they're doing with the earlier kids, in terms of providing a lot of other services that's not related to education, but it impacts education. And so we feel that, you know, kids develop a trust with us. You know, even those who are not there that we committed to, as Melvin said, those who have been gone a year, we're still engaging them where I think Melvin pointed out one time a kid said, are you really going to be there for me when the program ends? You know, really trying to believe and hold because they're used to being disappointed by adults. So if a charter school, and there are charter schools through Youth Build in the country, if it's something our board will look at if we flush this out through work, it's just another tool for kids that don't make it in mainstream schools.
Okay, I agree. Another point that came up was the changing bank financing for housing. And Among your partners, are there any particular financial institutions? I mean, what kind of support are you getting for the supermarket initiative as well as the housing? Is it there, or is that a problem?
No, actually, the make a supermarket really works is if you receive the grant money, the operations side can work itself. So we're not trying to burden with the debt. Kitty Rice at M&T Bank and some of her commercial lenders, they have looked over our business plan. They've been very helpful with us. So that's one example. For the housing component piece, Beverly Fair at M&T, they've been a great partner. I think we're dealing with Citizen now and a few other banks. Desiree does that in our office, Dixie, my daughter, actually. So we've had good relationships. It's not a lot of building going on, but we've had good relationships with the bankers that we've worked with over the years.
I would give credit to those working in our local branches because a lot of the culture changes, if you will, have been handed down from the big corporate offices. But those that are working here, like Beverly Fairbrooks at M&T, those loan officers in the local banks have worked really hard and diligently with us. So, you know, M&T Bank, Citizens Bank, Bank of America, their local representatives have been have been very supportive as much as they can, given the size of the actual corporation they work for.
One more youth built question, and that is the transition. You talked about some of the projects that the students, while they're in youth built working, what are the connections? There is a lot of construction going on in the community right now. A lot of it is publicly funded, but, you know, by construction being done by private companies. So are the kids or the graduates, whatever, are they then going into, are they staying locally and getting jobs with local companies?
We had placements with last year's class, McComb Headquarters. We currently have a couple of our participants that are currently in college. Some of our participants landed jobs before the program was over, and they're currently still working on that. For those who did not complete their GED, that's where their focus is right now. And one of the aims with this year's class, and I'm really pushing for, in addition to completing the two components earlier in the process, is also really focusing on going on to further their education with possible vocational training or going on to continue with college. We have a partnership with On Point for College that's been great in helping our young men and women go on to further their education.
All right. Well, thank you, all of you from Jubilee Homes, and again, we'll check back with you.